This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, it wasn't a cage match, but it was close. Senator Tim Kaine and Governor Mike Pence engaged in a vigorous but substantive debate last night. Former Congresswoman and GOP presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann is here to analyze the first and only vice presidential debate of this 2016 cycle. And another Obama administration cover-up in the works, the Department of Justice dropping charges against an arms dealer accused of attempting to sell arms to Libyan rebels, reportedly out of fear that the information at a trial could bring more scrutiny on Hillary Clinton's involvement and her private email server. Texas Congressman Louie Gohmert is here for that conversation. Also, is the media's distortion of Trump's comments on PTSD, which were made on Monday, an effort to cover up the neglect of our veterans by the Obama administration? General Jerry Boykin joins me again this afternoon to explain. That's coming up here on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home, got to stop, get a loaf of bread, jug of milk, and you miss something, well, later tonight, you can check out the archives at TonyPerkins.com. Also, lots of resources there for you as you are working to make sure that your friends, family, and neighbors turn out to vote on November the 8th. There's resources there for you. Voter Guides shows you where the candidates stand, speaking of the presidential candidates. Also, something that's very instructive and helpful. And this is compliant. C3 compliant can be used in churches and elsewhere. It's simply a comparison of the two major parties, the Republican and the Democratic parties, and their platforms. Now, bear in mind, I said this yesterday, and we talk about this in this short video. It's about 3 minutes long, very helpful. You can look at it. The Republicans, believe it or not, about 89% of the time, almost 89% of the time, they actually govern according to the platform. It's an important document. The Democrats, about three-quarters of the time. So the things that are in these platforms, like the Democratic Party advocates for taxpayer funding of abortion, forced taxpayer funding of abortion. The Republican Party say they want to defund Planned Parenthood and get taxpayers out of that forced partnership with Planned Parenthood. Those are key issues. And, of course, there's a lot more. Check it out at TonyPerkins.com. All right, last night was the one and only vice presidential debate at Virginia's Longwood University. Now, during the debate, Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine tangled with Republican Mike Pence about which side has hurled the most insults during the 2016 campaign. Actually, it was a little comical almost. But actually, I have to say there was a lot of substance to the debate, too. They covered a lot of ground, a lot of policy in between the barbs. But I thought it was actually pretty instructive. It was informative. Well, joining me now to analyze the debate is former Congresswoman from the state of Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, and herself a candidate for president. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Great to be with you and your terrific audience today.
Hey, thanks so much for taking time out to join us. I want to get your initial thoughts of the debate. We'll get into the substance, but just in terms of performance, I know you've had to go up in a number of these debates, a lot of pressure. How do you think the candidates performed last night in the debate?
Well, it's a tough thing. For the sake of your audience, the stage doesn't get any bigger than the ones that these candidates were on last night. And so they knew that they had 90 minutes nonstop. I think that the first debate is a tough one. I think if they could do it again, it would be very different than the one that we saw last night. And overall, I think it was difficult to watch because it was hard to maintain a stream of a theme because of the constant interruptions that were going on. It was more staccato, I would say, at a staccato pace. So really, the audience takes away two things. One is, what is the overall feel that I get of these two candidates?
Right.
And I think regarding that, I think Mike Pence won. I think Tim Kaine was probably very surprised after the debate that even liberals panned his performance, including the Washington Post, MSNBC. They gave it to Pence because Pence was likable, Kaine was not. And that's not how you want to end a debate, to not be likable and have an overall negative impression. And then number two would be substance. And there, people dig down a little bit deeper. And I wish there could have been more of a sustained effort at each candidate being able to explain their side, because I think that's where your listeners really would have enjoyed getting more information from the two candidates on the stark differences that there are between these two candidates.
But even so, I think there was actually more substance in this debate than we've seen in the presidential debates. They actually did talk about some policies.
Yeah.
But to your point, Michelle, and I think it's a good one, I've made it before about these debates, is that more than what you know, people, and this is kind of an old saying, they want to know that you're that you care, that you're mm-hmm. likable, and just how you come across is very important. And of course, you served with Mike Pence in the House. Mm-hmm. Mike is, he has core convictions. He is special. He's strong on the life issue, but he also, you know, like you, he comes across in a way that's friendly and engaging. And I think that was on. I think that was on full display last night.
You're exactly right. I think Mike Pence displayed a demeanor and a temperament of being a statesman, and I have known him for years. From the very first day I came into the United States Congress, Mike Pence is a class act. He is the real deal. He is a strong, committed believer in Jesus Christ. He's a dedicated father, a dedicated husband. It'd be very hard to find anyone more committed to the pro-life cause or anyone more committed to stand for Israel. I could tell Mike was very frustrated last night because Tim Kaine was stating a falsehood when he said that President Obama's Iran agreement was stopping Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. It's just
right.
The opposite, and Mike Pence knew it, and Mike Pence wanted to put that fact on the table, that in fact Barack Obama gave $150 billion to ensure Iran would have a nuclear weapon. And I know that Mike wanted to spend more time on that issue. He wanted to spend more time on the pro-life issue. That was obvious. He wanted to talk more about Israel. You could tell he was trying to get there. And unfortunately, the CBS moderator, which you have to assume nearly all these moderators are going to tend to take more the side of the Democrat than the Republican, and she certainly did last night, they weren't there to do any favors for Mike Pence. The questions that they asked him put him on defense, and Mike did a very good job answering those questions. But this is all a part of what you have to be prepared for when the debate night comes.
Now, he went back several times to the Iran issue, brought it back up. He also pointed out that when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was speaking before a joint session of Congress on the Iran deal, that Kaine actually boycotted. He was one of eight senators who did not show up for that speech. So there's a lot of ground they covered last night because they only had one debate. So they went through, you know, foreign policy, domestic policy, and they covered a lot of ground. And I do give Pence a lot of credit, even though he was interrupted 70 times by Kaine. He managed to bring up a number of these issues and, in fact, go after the Clinton-Kaine campaign for some of the issues that Donald Trump had not brought up, like the Clinton Foundation,
repeatedly
bringing up the email. So I thought he was very effective in exploring a little deeper than Donald Trump was able to do in the presidential debate.
Well, that's right, and the audience was looking for that last night because they saw there were missed opportunities in the very first debate. And again, just briefly so that your audience knows, Mrs. Clinton's very serious problem is the fact that she betrayed the United States government. She was the third most powerful person in government. Her duty was to maintain the classified secrets of our government, but instead, she willfully chose to betray some of the most sensitive secrets of the United States to our enemies in real time in an ongoing manner for 4 years. And she did that because of her ambition to be president of the United States. She didn't want anyone to get access to those emails, and that's why we saw her delete over half of them. She chose the ones she wanted to delete because she didn't want to get found out for what she had done. What she did would put anyone in jail, and I think Mike Pence was trying to make that point, but it's very important that your audience understands that Mrs. Clinton, as Secretary of State, willfully betrayed the national security secrets of this nation to America's enemies, and that she has put the United States in a severely disadvantaged position decades into the future. That alone, Tony, should mean that she should never get anywhere near the Oval Office. And I think that it's important that this issue be revisited and revisited again so that people know the magnitude of the severity of what she did to harm the United States.
Yeah, in fact, as you made reference to, Mike Pence did bring that up last night when he made the comment that Tim Kaine, who has a son who's serving in the Marine Corps, as does Mike Pence, he said, if our sons would have handled classified material the way that Hillary Clinton did, that they both would have been court-martialed. And
they would have done it one time, they would have had to serve a jail sentence of 10 years. She had classified material, thousands of emails, thousands on her server.
And that is absolutely the case. And military experts have said repeatedly that if members of the military, and we saw the former CIA director, he ran afoul by dealing with classified material in an improper way. But as we've seen, there seems to be a kind of a special case when it comes to
a double standard.
A double standard, absolutely.
And I know you're going to get into Congressman Gohmert with the Department of Justice that just announced that they're dropping a case because they know yet here is one more muckety scandal involving Hillary Clinton, and it wouldn't do well for her running for the presidency if that information would get out too. She has unfortunately surrounded herself with one scandal after another, and that alone should tell us something about her character, because again, in the Federalist Papers, our founders, including Madison, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, when they wrote about the presidency of the United States and the qualifications to be president, they didn't talk about education or the amount of land that one owned or how wealthy one was. They talked about character being the most important attribute of being president. I think that's what all of these scandals that Mrs. Clinton has gotten herself involved in over the decades, the 35 years that she's been in politics, it's one after another. I think that should really give us pause when we go to vote this November.
Without question. Michelle Bachmann, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Always a privilege. Thanks again to you and your audience.
All right. Former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, as Michelle just previewed, Congressman Louis Gohmert here after the break to talk about breaking news out of the Department of Justice dropping charges against an arms dealer. What's behind it? We're going to talk about that with our good friend Louis Gohmert of Texas. Don't go away.
This November, faith, family, and freedom are on the ballot. After 8 years of President Obama, this election will mark the beginning of a new chapter in America. With hundreds of federal races and thousands of state and local contests, the results will determine the future of pro-life legislation, our ability to freely live out our religious beliefs, and who our next Supreme Court justices will be. That's why FRC Action is mounting the National Values Voter Bus Tour. Our bus tour is traveling the country and working with national and state groups to equip and mobilize values voters in battleground states and key races across the nation. As it travels the country, the Values Bus could be coming to a city near you. Join us in the effort for your values, your vote, your future. Visit valuesbustour.org for more information and to find a stop near you. That is valuesbustour.org. Hope to see you soon.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. By the way, just again, just a reminder, if you're listening to Washington Watch, you find this informative and helpful. You're able to listen to this because of not only the station that you hear the program on, but this program is underwritten by folks like you across the country that care about our country and defending faith, family, and freedom. This is a ministry of the Family Research Council. If you'd like to be a partner with us, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over and become a partner with the Family Research Council and ensure that Washington Watch continues to be on the airwaves across the United States. And also, encourage, invite a friend to listen in so that they, too, can have this information. Don't keep it to yourself. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about the debate last night, because I did think it was very, very insightful. And there was a couple of areas where Mike Pence, I thought respectfully and tactfully, moved in to expose these areas of Hillary Clinton. And I think it's important, okay, that these areas, the voters know about them. Now, one of the things that was said, some reporters said that Pence, that Trump aides were disappointed that Pence didn't better defend his running mate. I actually did not take that. I thought that what he did is he didn't take the bait in trying to just regurgitate the accusations and charges of the left, but say focus on the policies that they were trying to promote, the differences between the two campaigns. I thought it was a very smart way to handle it. You don't want to just repeat the charges of your opponent and spend your time, trying to explain what they just said was not true. Just deflect it and move on, because you're allowing them then to define the terms of the debate. So I actually thought he handled it quite well. One of the things he did do is he went on the offense and exposed Hillary's attack on Trump supporters. And here is a clip. I want to play this clip of, you remember the deplorable comment. All right, well, Mike brought that up last night in the debate. Here's what he had to say.
Hold on a second.
It's my
Governor.
Time, Senator.
It is, in fact, the governor's time.
I apologize. This is your 2 minutes.
Thanks. I forgive you. He says ours is an insult-driven campaign. Did you all just hear that? Ours is an insult-driven campaign? I mean, to be honest with you, if Donald Trump had said all the things that you said he said in the way you said he said them, he still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables. She said they were irredeemable. They were not America. I mean, it's extraordinary. And then she laid one after another ism on millions of Americans who believe that we can have a stronger America at home and abroad, who believe we can get this economy moving again, who believe that we can end illegal immigration once and for all. So, Senator, insult-driven campaign. I mean, that's small potatoes compared to Hillary Clinton calling
Senator
half
Kane,
of Donald Trump's supporters a basket of deplorables.
Now, he went on, Kane went on to say, well, she apologized. She apologized. I think he said that a couple of times. She apologized for calling half of Trump's supporters, saying half. I apologize for saying half. That's what she said the following day when she was challenged with this. So she didn't apologize for calling them deplorable, just calling for half of them. I guess maybe she thinks only a quarter or a third, but not a half. To his credit, Mike Pence brought that to the forefront of the debate. I mean, think about it. Deplorable, irredeemable. Talk about insult-driven. And the whole process has been, continues to be, nasty. But again, I go back to that. That's a pretty significant term when you talk about deplorables. All right. I think we're waiting on Louis Gohmert to get him in. But I don't want to lose this opportunity to talk about this issue. This is kind of breaking news where the Department of Justice is dropping charges against an alleged arms broker that was attempting to sell weapons to Libyan rebels. Now, the significance of this is that there are those that are saying that the reason that the Department of Justice in an agreement are dropping charges against Mark Turi, they're saying that under the deal, Turi admits no guilt in the transactions he participated in, but he agreed to refrain from U.S.-regulated arms deals for 4 years. A $200,000 civil penalty will be waived if Turi abides by the agreement. Now, this is pretty significant in that what is being alleged, and this is actually coming from his associates, Turi advisor Robert Sturck of the government relations and consulting firm SPG accused the government of trying to scapegoat Turi to cover up Clinton's mishandling of Libya. Quote, the U.S. government spent millions of dollars, went all over the world to bankrupt him and destroy his life, all to protect Hillary Clinton's crimes, he said, alluding to the deadly September 11, 2012 terrorist attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. That's from a Politico story out today. Now, Turi's lawyers argued that the shipments were part of U.S. government-authorized effort to arm Libyan rebels. Now, it's just interesting the timing of this, where they're dropping all charges, saying, hey, everything's forgiven. Go away. Don't say anything. This could further expose Hillary's bathroom server, the emails, violation of how she handled classified material, and potentially other actions that could be illegal. Nothing surprises me from this administration. All right, when we come back, is there a reason the left is making such a big deal out of Donald Trump's comments about post-traumatic stress syndrome? Why are they distorting them? Is it to cover up something that maybe this administration has done or isn't doing? We're going to talk about that with General Boykin when we return.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the questions I get all the time is, when should I start receiving Social Security? It's a good question, and it's one that's been wrestled with for years. Of course, there's a lot of viewpoints out there, and my viewpoint is a little bit different than most. The general viewpoint is, look, start collecting Social Security as early as you possibly can. The sooner you start, the more you're going to end up with in the long run. Well, that's an okay viewpoint, I guess. If you are thinking about, well, I'm 62 now, I'm going to start accumulating some wealth. Too late. It's not the time to be thinking about that, in my opinion. From a personal perspective, I'm not going to start collecting Social Security, Lord willing, until I'm 70. And I'm going to receive 31% more money every month by waiting till I'm age 70. See, here's the thing. You need to change your focus. Forget about how much you're going to accumulate or how much you're going to get out of the government if you live a long time. And start thinking about the only thing that matters, and the only thing, trust me on this, that's going to matter to you, is, do I have enough income to pay my monthly expenses? It's all that should matter. The only thing that should matter is receiving, collecting as much fixed income as you possibly can. I think it pays to wait, as long as you possibly can. Take that Social Security at a later date. Oh, I know overall you're not going to receive as much, but I guarantee you, as your monthly expenses go up, you'll appreciate the fact that you have more income every month coming in because you waited. Ultimately, that's all you're going to care about.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
This is Washington Watch, and I am Tony Perkins, and we're glad that you're along with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, still to come, General Boykin's going to be joining me to talk about whether or not there's something behind the liberal media distorting, rather than reporting, Donald Trump's comments Monday about post-traumatic stress syndrome. We're going to talk about that. But first, I want to go back to this story I was just mentioning because we now have Congressman Gohmert. He's joined us, and I want to finish this conversation we were having about the Department of Justice dropping these charges against an arms dealer accused of attempting to sell weapons to Libyan rebels. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Sorry to be slow getting on, but this is very consistent with what we had been hearing, that we know that Obama wanted to help the Libyans overthrow Gaddafi. He came on television and told us. And, you know, I'd had some of the leaders in Israel tell me when I was over there, we don't understand why you want to take out Gaddafi. He was, since 2003, he had blood on his hands before 2003, but since 2003, he's been more help to you in getting terrorists than anybody but us in Israel. And but that was what Obama wanted to do, and we knew that there were some elements of al-Qaeda in the rebels, and some of us on the House floor and other places were begging, please don't take out Gaddafi till we know whether you're actually helping al-Qaeda. And these were radical Islamists, and what Obama did in taking out Gaddafi, and yes, I know it was NATO that did it, but I think over 60% of their military is U.S. We were the ones really bombing, even though he says we turned it over to NATO, and we took out Gaddafi. And there was no question our administration wanted to get guns to the rebels. And in fact, I have asked Boehner point blank, did you know that the administration was trying to get weapons to the Libyans and then from Libya to Syria? And he refused to answer the question. So,
well, I was going to ask you about that. Is that why the Republicans were dragging their feet for such a long time to impanel the select committee to look into Benghazi?
Yeah. It took 2.5 years to get him to agree to a select committee, And even then, he had, Trey may not admit, but he had hamstrung the committee. They couldn't go to court and demand what Judicial Watch was getting. And I told Boehner in front of all these other Republican members of the House, if you tell me that you knew about the effort to get weapons, the U.S. to get weapons into the Libyans and weapons from Libya to Syria, I'll never bring it up again, and I'll just assume you're trying to help our party. And he said, we can get into Benghazi without getting into this other stuff you're talking about. And I said, I'm asking you a direct question. Did you know before 9/11 of 2012 that we had tried to get weapons to the Libyans and weapons from Libyans to the Syrians? And he said, and I have answered that question. We can talk about this without getting into any of that stuff you're talking about. And I said, well, that's the most non-denial I've heard since Watergate. And he said, well, you've got an answer to your question. And, Tony, I did have an answer. He knew about it. Obama knew about it. And, I'd heard from intelligence officials that said, the guy that was they arrested over there, Ahmad Abu Qatala, they arrested him in, what was it, a couple of years or so after Benghazi happened. And our intelligence people told me they knew where he had been for a year. It was just the Obama administration felt like they had to have a show. They arrest him. They put him on a slow boat to New York. He comes in and enters a not guilty plea. And some of the former intelligence officials told me they don't expect that guy will ever be able to go to court because they can't afford to have him come in and talk about the fact that he was working with U.S. entities in supplying the Libyan rebels. So they're saying don't. And I know in May, I think the administration announced they're not going to seek the death penalty for Qatala, but and some people, why not go after the death penalty since he orchestrated, helped plan, and was there for the attack? I'm waiting to see if they actually bring him to trial and let him talk. They kept him incommunicado.
We're almost out of time here, Lou, but the issue of why Hillary was trying to cover this up, if in fact Republicans with oversight in Congress knew about this, then there shouldn't be any problem with this information coming out. There's got to be more to it than that.
Well, there is a lot more to it than that, and Hillary was in it up to her eyeballs. She was Secretary of State. None of this happens if it was not her idea or her strongly behind it. So, yeah, she's in it up to her eyeballs. She does not want this pursued, and that's why you haven't had a trial of Qatala before now. And it's also why that Turek, they're not pursuing that through charges. They don't want this guy to come in and talk about his contacts with the State Department. From what our intelligence people told me, yes, of course, there were all kinds of State Department ties with him. And he understood that they gave him permission to do this. He initially said he made a proposal to the State Department, buy the weapons and send them to the rebels. They said, no, that's too direct. If you do it through Qatar, then we can go along with that.
And all right, Louie, we got to leave
like
it.
He had their permission.
Got to leave it there. Congressman right, Louie Gohmert, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you. All right, folks, don't go away. General Jerry Boykin joins us on the other side of the break.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the Land of the Bible with us in March.
The AFA Cultural Institute, a video library of resources dealing with the discussions of our day.
Marriage and family, finances, how we know that the text of the Bible is actually what was originally written. The AFA Cultural Institute takes all of these topics and puts them in the hands of people to be able to equip them.
Start your library of the AFA Cultural Institute, now available for purchase as downloads or DVDs at afastore.net.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
American Family Radio is for your family.
Thanks to AFR, I got the courage to found a gay school, which we are founded for the glory of God and for the health of the family. And we are in our fourth year now, and we have a lot of happy children and parents. And throughout the entire process of founding the school and hiring the faculty, getting the curriculum, finding the equipment, finding the place, recruiting families, everything, I have turned to AFR, and they have been amazing. Everyone from Alex McFarland and Brian Fisher, Sandy Rios, James Dobson, it's just all fantastic. Keep up the good work. You're an inspiration to me daily. Thanks.
Your financial gift keeps your family equipped for the culture war. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning October 18th. Listener-supported American Family Radio.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. We talked yesterday about the liberal mainstream media distorting rather than reporting Donald Trump's comments at Monday's gathering of retired military leaders. When he was asked a question, and I know this as we, if you're just joining us for the first time this week, my next guest, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, and I were actually the moderators of this event. Donald Trump was sitting between us, so we heard this firsthand. But questions were asked of the audience, and a question was asked by a Marine Staff Sergeant who was a recon ranger, Chad Robichaux, regarding post-traumatic stress syndrome and a holistic approach to that. Well, Mr. Trump said yes, faith-based, you know, holistic, yeah, we'll do that. And in his comments, he made a comment, and the media took it and distorted it, saying that he said that those who suffer from PTSD were weak. Never said that. That's what they said. But my point is this, and I invite now General Boykin to join me. General, welcome back to Washington.
Thank you, Tony.
You're becoming a regular here on the program.
I know.
Yeah.
When you can't find anybody else, you bring me on.
Well, I always need a straight guy.
Yeah.
I need a straight guy. If any new Marine jokes you found?
I got a bunch.
Oh, never mind.
Just, I got
hold, a bunch. Hold them for 6:05.
Okay.
All right. The VA clinic in Phoenix. This was the clinic that was the subject of controversy before, and yet another Inspector General's report says that it is still improperly canceling veterans' appointments and has built up a new backlog of cases, and at least one veteran is likely dead because of it. Mm-hmm. This was according to the department's inspector general in a new report released yesterday. Now, my point is this. It is the whole reason that we see the liberal media that covers for the Obama administration and now, I think, pretty much any progressive candidate, they're trying to cover their own tracks. I mean, they're like a cat in a sandbox trying to cover up their own mess by pointing to Donald Trump and distorting his comments.
I don't think there's any question about that. Trump, you know, without much prompting, came out very early in his campaign identifying the problems in the VA and making a pledge to deal with those problems if he becomes president. And he has been consistent in that. And, you know, you and I were there for moderating this event, and there was absolutely nothing that was said there that in any way could have been misperceived by the media as him disparaging veterans in general, military in general, or people with PTSD, but they came up with it anyhow. And I think that this is a reflection of just how biased they actually are towards Trump. They're afraid of Trump. He is going to make the Obama administration look really bad on these issues if he is elected president.
So they look for something to try to draw attention away from their own malfeasance and negligence. And in fact, I mean, some of this is criminal negligence in what I believe they've done, because this has been reported. They knew it was a problem. They've not fixed it. And yet more veterans have died.
No, that's right, Tony. And you think about, simple things like getting a colonoscopy that might save your life. And veterans can't even get in and get that kind of procedure. But the Obama administration has ensured that a traitor is going to be able to have the surgery to complete his transition to from a man to a woman. And there's just something wrong with that when the priorities are that skewed in terms of medical care for serving members of the military and for veterans.
Yeah, speaking of that, I want to get your comments and thoughts on a new 72-page manual released by the Pentagon, a new handbook this week, I think once again revealing what the administration's priorities are. It's not a manual on how to fight ISIS or a manual on maybe to review the code of conduct so that you right. would know how to act if you're captured by the enemy.
Right.
It's guidelines on how best to deal with and be receptive toward transgender members of the military. So we see the administration yep. pushing forward without congressional input on integrating transgenders into our nation's military. I mean, what else can this administration do to the military other than just disband it?
Well, I don't know. This administration has had a devastating impact on our military readiness, and what the Congress should be doing and the president should be doing now in every decision that's made regarding the military is the first question should be, how does this enhance readiness, the ability to fight and win the nation's wars? Every one of these social engineering things comes with a training package. You need to understand that you're going to force every man and woman in uniform to sit in a classroom and go through hours and hours of classes every time you throw in a new social experiment. And it's not a one-time thing. It may be monthly, it may be quarterly, it may be semi-annually, but you're going to spend an awful lot of time that could be used on the code of conduct, on preparing for war. You're going to spend a lot of your training time, which is very valuable, doing the programs that come with these social experiments.
I mean, the Pentagon spokesperson for the Pentagon says, and notice they say spokesperson, mm-hmm. not a
yeah.
spokesman or woman,
right,
because you just right. don't know, is designed to assist our transgender service members in their gender transitions, help commanders with their duties and responsibilities, and help all service members understand new policies enabling the open service of transgender service members.
Yeah. Again, it comes back to, what is the purpose of the military? What's their mission? It's to fight and win wars. That's what Douglas MacArthur said at West Point in 1962. Your mission remains determined, fixed, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars. Ask yourself, how does this enhance the ability to win wars?
You know, I probably need to take it back where I said that the only thing worse the president could do would be to disband the military. Actually, that might even be better. We'd probably be better off without a military that is not compromised, because we think we have a military that's defending mm-hmm. our country and able to do that. But we have a military that in many ways is a hollowed out shell. Not that the men and women there, we have many committed men and women, but what this right. administration has done this was discussed on Monday, sequestration, the missed opportunities and the distorted priorities uh-huh. of this administration has left our military depleted.
It certainly has, Tony. And I'll tell you what else it's doing. It is making it difficult to retain some of the best people, and it is making it difficult to recruit people. And I talked to a recruiter out in Oklahoma here about 3 weeks ago, and he just told me, he said, I'm not going to make my goals. I said, what's the problem? He said, the young men and women here in the state of Oklahoma, and that's a patriotic state.
It's where I enlisted.
Yeah. He said they are just don't want to come in. And I've talked to a bunch of them that are, senior non-commissioned officers and young officers that are saying, I thought I was going to make it a career, but I'm just fed up with it. I can't do it anymore. And they're leaving.
Now, this was a topic that was discussed on Monday after Donald Trump had left about what will it take to turn this military in. Let's say somebody wanted to turn, and I hope we do elect someone who will want to turn the military around. I mean, this president has, and we know this from his top personnel in the Department of, in the Pentagon, Secretary of Defense, have commented the only time that he was engaged is when it was some portion of his social agenda that he was pushing onto the military. So this president, on his way out here, I mean, look, he's on his way out. This is the final act of a failed play called the Obama administration, and his last act is to put transgenderism into our military on top of everything else. What will it take to turn this military around so that it can, in fact, do what you just described a few minutes ago, fight and win wars?
Take leadership. First of all, you got to have a Secretary of Defense that understands what the military is all about. And thus far, we haven't had one under this administration. Secondly, you got to have uniform leadership. You got to have a chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the service chiefs, all of which have to have a warrior ethos. That warrior ethos has been purged out of our military to a large degree. Now, there's still some warriors in there. But I think the next president is going to have to dig deep and find those people that understand the mission of the military, that are willing to make the sacrifices that are necessary, even to disagree with the president. Now you say, well, that doesn't sound right. I mean, they are sworn to support and defend the Constitution. Well, that's right. And Article 2 of the Constitution says the president is a commander-in-chief, but their first obligation is to the larger Constitution. And when they know that they can't support a policy, it is time for them to do just what Jack Singlob did when Jimmy Carter said, we're pulling out of Korea. Jack Singlob, a World War II Distinguished Service Cross veteran, laid his stars on the table and said, I will not support that policy. I don't believe in it. He lost his job. But we're still in Korea, aren't we? We need that same kind of thing today. We've got to have leadership to turn this military around, and it's not going to be easy.
Well, you mentioned, General Boykin, the purge that's taking place, and we've watched this as a number of generals who raised questions initially privately about the Obama administration purged from the ranks so that, you know, I'm not going to say that it's uniformly yes men, but there's certainly a lot of people that have gone along with this agenda.
Yeah.
Would this require bringing back those who have left the ranks of service? I mean, does this require bringing back some military officers who have that ethos to help straighten out the military?
I think that is part of the solution. I don't think that the next president is going to be able to turn this around unless he does. But remember Al Haig. Al Haig was brought back in military service. Even when I was in the service, Pete Schoomaker was brought back on active duty and made the chief of staff of the Army. That is a common thing to do. And I think even MacArthur, you know, so it is a common thing to do, but it's not the total solution. There will be some selective, I think, returns to active duty, but what you've got to do is you've got to dig deep into the ranks. You've got to find those guys with the warrior ethos that have proven combat records, that have been proven leaders. And you've got to turn them loose and tell them to restore the warrior ethos in the military. Again, this is not about getting a free education or on the GI Bill.
Yeah, I saw that the other day on advertisement for one of the branches of service. It was actually for the Guard. It said part-time job, full-time benefits.
Yeah.
And it's more about – and I thought – literally, as I was walking down the street, I saw that. And I thought about JFK, John F. Kennedy's comments when he said, you know, ask not – what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And I thought, you know, how we've turned that around. to where it's all about what we can get rather than the service. Now, I know that there are men and women who serve for the right reason. That's why we still produce men and women of great character and selflessness, as we've seen over the last two decades, as we've been involved in this conflict. But that has not been the focal point of this administration and the military. Can these social policies, which you and I have talked about extensively over the last 5-6 years, can the damage be undone?
No, not totally. I think that we can go a long ways to restore readiness and restore the warrior ethos, but there are some things that are so deeply embedded now that you can't unring a bell. I don't think you can overcome these things. And if you did, if the president did, he would have to have the total support of the Congress to be able to to reverse some of these things that have occurred. But, you know, a few years ago, I just want to say one thing. A few years ago, the Army had this motto, be all you can be. And they were showing these advertisements trying to get people to recruit people, and they were showing these advertisements about all the educational opportunities and the skills you could learn and all that. Marine Corps went out and showed warriors. They showed warriors in a nice-looking uniform, but they showed combat scenes, and they had no problem recruiting. The Army did, and it finally dawned on the Army, you know what? They're appealing to young men and women at a level that they understand.
And you mentioned that because that's one of the things I still track, the Marine Corps advertising, and they used a commitment to something greater than yourself.
That's right.
That's been their advertising slogan.
That's right.
And that's – we still produce those type of young men and women in this country. And I think you would agree with me, that is a product of the deeply intertwined Christian ethic that's in this country. You know, Jesus said, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. When we lose that ethic, when we have purged that from our society, I believe we'll have great difficulty in finding those self-sacrificing men and women to serve others.
Tony, I agree with you totally. And remember that when you purge the foundations of faith out of the military, what you risk is having a mercenary army. And a mercenary army is capable of doing some very bad things.
Right.
So we've got to maintain that foundation of faith, not only in the military, but in our society.
And that's why you fight so aggressively for religious freedom in our military, working with our chaplains and others.
Yeah. And I think that we've got a good network of not only other similar groups to us, but certainly a network of chaplains that work with us.
All right, General Boykin, thanks so much for joining us. Go back to your computer
and look
up those Marine jokes. All right, folks, glad you're with us today. Let me leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.